Benny, Ben. Ben, it's your time of the year. It's your time to shine.
Why is that?
Because it's Major League Baseball playoffs. Although I was pretty disappointed when you prioritized getting your kids from school yesterday baseball.
I'm sorry. I thought the whole
deal
was...
My
eldest is. And bro. I thought... So I have a now 9 and 6-year-old, so grade 4 and grade 1.
School is next door.
Yeah, it's literally like I don't even have to go on a sidewalk or a street. I walk through a park.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why are you missing playoff baseball for this?
So in kindergarten, you got to go, like, break them out of the gates, like, out of the prison. Like, you got to break them out.
I don't understand this, but sure, go on.
There's a gate. They're literally, allowed. Yeah, they're not allowed. They don't go out to recess with the other kids. They're literally in, like, a holding pen. Like, they're separate.
They're like the dangerous prisoners.
Yeah.
It's like that movie Shock Caller, where they put the worst of the Nazis in the... In the, like, a singular... Did you ever see that movie, the prison movie, Shot Caller?
No.
Okay, damn it.
I could tell your eyes went dead when I did
that reference.
When do I get to talk again?
Michael Zay knows he's movie
talking.
Guy.
Talking, okay. Yeah. The kindergartners are like Nazis. Anyways,
yeah.
When they get to grade one, they're not in the pen. They do normal recess together, and they kind of leave in the same way. But you do have to, like, they don't get to just leave of their own accord. You need to take them away. But I was like... Oh, my eldest, I think in grade 3, you are allowed to leave if, like, it's okayed by your parents. He does walk home. But for some reason, they've staggered the times that they've been released. So, like, my little guy gets out, like, 10 minutes prior to the big guy. If they got out at the same time, he would go over. Like, I'm going to make him sit with the teacher, but he's the last kid.
But they should let the older kids out earlier.
No kidding.
And then
they don't do
they
that.
Can let the olders raise the youngers.
Yeah, that's not how they do. That would only make logical sense.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I'd sign a release form. I'd be like, hey.
Just let him go.
I'm watching Jason Hayward line out loudly.
No, I was back for that.
Yeah, you were back for that, but you missed Kirkjian.
Yeah.
And if anyone
told me about
this, is yesterday I'm watching playoff.
Did you pull the audio or something?
No, I wish. Oh. I don't think we can use that audio.
Why not? It's on Sportsnet.
I guess. Yeah, it's ESPN. I don't know. Whatever. But yeah, we should see if you can find that actually for later on today, because I don't want to overstate it because it's so funny. Like, production crew, over the next hour, I want to see if you can find the Tim Kirkjian talking about how the Astros signed Framber Valdez story. You might want to Google hissing curveball.
Yeah.
See if you can get it. But yeah, Kirkjian told this outrageous story that almost felt like it was completely fake, and then he bought it and took it to air. And the second he finished telling the story, you could tell he was like, I don't actually wish I said that. I wish.
We've all in this industry had those moments where you're like, was the mic on the whole time?
Because you can tell right after, because there's like an awkward silence. It's a 3-man booth. Mm-hmm. There's very little silence in a 3-man booth.
Right.
And he finishes speaking, and Todd Frazier and Michael Kay, like, take a few beats, and then all of a sudden it's broken with what's a hissing curveball. Anyway, the claim from Kirkjian was that the Houston Astros signed Framber Valdez by going and scouting him in a ballpark that was so dark that they couldn't see him. Mm. So they listened to the hiss of his curveball, to which Todd Frazier asked, what is a hissing curveball? And Kirkjian got immediately defensive and was like, you would know better than me.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, well, he doesn't know at all. So if you don't know, then it's a big problem.
A couple of problems there. One is like, wow.
It was the highlight of playoff baseball for me yesterday. I just want everybody to know that. As good as the games were, as fun as it is to watch the Mets right now and, like, their fans, the hissing curveball was everything to me.
I need to talk to that catcher. Like, that is, did he get hazard pay? It's like trying to catch a curveball in the dark.
Yeah.
And secondarily, bad job, Astros. Yeah, like, it worked out, but, like, actually, try using your eyeballs.
No, but here's the thing. I figured it out, and this is the way to get into the Blue Jays. The Jays love to replicate. They wanted to replicate a World Series champion.
Uh-huh.
So they obviously just hired those scouts, the guys who go scouting in the dark.
Dark scouts.
That's how you end up with this farm system, is they went, Astros did pretty well. They got a lot of good players. who was scouting for them? These guys are so good. They don't even need to see. Mm-hmm. They don't even need to see.
It might be blind guys because their other senses are heightened. Yeah. Maybe they're
in. Yeah.
God, if you're going to have, like, just have one thing, right? That's the whole thing. Over the near decade now that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins have been in charge. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't all been bad, right? Like 2021, despite missing the playoffs, was good on the strength of an incredible September and very trying circumstances, obviously, with the COVID and the ballpark restrictions, yada, yada, yada. 2022 was good. And then they fell apart in the playoffs because they maybe hired the wrong manager who went to the bullpen too early and didn't let his ace work himself out of a jam. Instead, went to Tim Mesa, who is now, is he still in the Yankees? Like, he was DFA'd and signed him. Anyways.
I don't know. But yeah, he's around, I'm sure.
Yeah, it wasn't all bad. But where they are now, after winning no division titles and after winning no playoff games, to have the strength of your team being in a rotation that was fine.
I think they were middle of the pack.
14th in Major League Baseball and ERA, slightly under 4, but that's the strength of this Blue Jays team. We would all agree at this point going into 2025. That's the strength, and having to remake the entire offense and an entire bullpen and having no farm system.
Yeah.
What exactly did you do for the last 10 years?
That's it. And this is what I don't understand. And so I want to do this segment with you, right? Like, you know, nothing matters, but what do you want to hear today? Because Shapiro and Atkins are speaking at 11 o'clock. We're going to take it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's going to be Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker who break it down and who shepherd you through this media conference. Instant reaction from those two guys. Can't hate to hear what they have to say. But, like, that would be my number one thing is what do you feel like you haven't had the opportunity to do? Because you walked in, you had complete carte blanche with the roster. You got to tear it down. I would argue that they didn't do the best job with the assets that were here. Like, they let Edwin Encarnacion walk for nothing. He was still a very good and productive baseball player for multiple years. They signed Kendrys Morales.
You mean they didn't re-sign him? Because, walking him, the one argument that they would make was that, hey, we even said explicitly we wanted to rebuild in 2016, but we couldn't because of the fan equity that was built in 2015.
Well, again, though, so the thing they wanted to do was to ruin 2016 when the team was actually good and they could have won a World Series. So good job by you evaluating a team that was going to win the World Series. But, okay, wait, hold on. Because now I wasn't even going that far backwards, but that's actually kind of a funny one to reevaluate.
Yeah. That's what I was talking about today.
Because these guys, what's so funny is they go, we don't listen to fans. We don't listen, like, we're not listening to the fans. We don't take cues from the fans. Because you take cues from the fan base, you know, you end up sitting with them. You literally, the only success you've ever had here was because you took cues from the fans. So, good. Like, congrats.
No. I mean, the comparison I made was, listen, if we just came in here unencumbered, we would have rebuilt. Yeah. It was getting old and the expiration date was fast approaching and could have flipped those assets and yada, yada, yada. We did it for you, the fans.
Well, for you.
There's, like, is there any debate that if, like, they didn't, upon admitting it's time for a rebuild, would be immediately fired? If that weren't the case, if they were just coming in here with fresh eyes, like, here, Mark Shapiro's, this is his introductory news conference, not his season-ending one, he wouldn't be like, needing to remake the entire bullpen?
Obviously.
All the offense and no farm system? We're taking
a
step backwards here.
Dude, how would he have blasted? Mark Shapiro would have blasted Shapiro or Atkins for emptying the farm system. He'd be like, listen, I'm working with nothing.
Yeah.
He gave me Ricky Tiedemann's broken glass body and suspended Aurelvis Martinez.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to make something out of this for next season? I'm supposed to what?
No.
Sign 4 bullpen arms, sign a starter, sign what, multiple bats, a DH, an outfielder.
Ben, like, Nichols and Smith did the best job of revisiting the quotes from that press conference in 2016 about how, we got in AAA 5 TBAs in the rotation, and it's 8 years later.
Nothing.
And it's like worse than that.
Well, dude, I mentioned this to him yesterday on the show. These guys, when they first came in here, were all about years of control.
Yeah.
They were parading that around. We were laughing because that's what they were trading for, was control, control, control. And now they're looking at it going, yeah, sure, we'll just walk everyone into free agency and we'll have no prospects, but we'll figure it out. Surely it'll work out. And
oh, yeah.
You know, he proposed, he's like, yeah, you can walk players to free agency, and I agree, but you're supposed to have success and a farm system of guys to replace them. Like the Astros didn't walk guys to free agency and then just go, what do we got down there?
Yeah.
And their team went, well, the darkness squad, the guys who scout in the dark, actually, they don't really have anything.
And also they're doing it with Alex Bregman, who seems well past his prime, obviously, and also has two World Series rings.
Buddy, they haven't missed. They had Peña replace Carlos Correa.
Yep.
They haven't. They've found Yordan Alvarez, who on one leg is still the most dangerous man in the postseason.
Yep.
Who have they missed on? Like, Correa is the only player that's actually still good. George Springer is completely washed.
Correa, rightly, and the Mets are breathing a sigh of relief that, he did fail that physical. Like,
no
kidding. Can't stay healthy.
Dude, I was thinking about parallel universes in terms of, because yesterday I sent you a tweet, because it was Lindor's agent who was like, Lindor was fully prepared to sign in Toronto, and had it not worked out with the Mets, they would have traded for him, and he would have gone there. God, Springer not deciding to sign in Connecticut, like around his home in Connecticut, and coming to the Blue Jays and them giving them that extra year. A different world. It's Lindor. Bo maybe gets traded, or
I mean, I think it was with you that we interviewed Bo Bichette and asked him about moving off shortstop for the right guy, and the reference was Lindor, and he said
no. It was and it was Andrelton Simmons.
That's
he was
right,
a free agent.
Yeah. And he was open to it in the moment. Would have been tougher. It would have been tougher for him.
Yeah.
No question. Also, they would have had to have given up assets, which, of course, the Mets did in that trade. And
whatever. We're going too far down the revisionist history thing.
Yeah, him. Jose Ramirez, I guess, just loved Cleveland too much that was never going to happen.
But he's right.
I guess.
What do you mean you guess? That team is good.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
he has to live in Cleveland.
In baseball? Yeah. Who cares? But you love living in Toronto?
I don't. So, I don't live here.
Yeah. No, your drive every day is so nice.
It's
what a luxurious city.
At 5
Everything's so
in the
expensive
morning?
And you can't go anywhere in a car.
Yeah. But I mean, I think if Jose Ramirez ends up somewhere else, he could have signed. Like, he could have written his own ticket, especially if he got himself to free agency.
Sure.
Like, there was more money to be had.
Yeah, there was more money to be had, and he actually is someone who offered a hometown discount to stay where he wanted to. And I would argue that part of that is that you believe in what the organization is building, because I don't think he just did that like Mike Trout.
For,
give me the most amount of money, and I'm comfortable. I think it was some combination of that, but I also think it was the fact that he could win. So, yeah, okay, back to the topic du jour. My question was, like, what have you guys gotten an opportunity to do? Because you walked in here, you had assets when you arrived. You didn't have a deep farm system, but you also didn't lose anything of real consequence. Like, when we look back on that thing, you did run it back in 2016, and it gave you a good playoff run. So, yes, you could have traded those players and built up the farm system even more, but you did also inherit Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the scouting staff before you did help with Bo Bichette. It's kind of always murky who exactly was there. But they inherited a group of prospect evaluators that actually did sort of set them off on the right course. By the time they put all their guys in place, their waves that they kept talking about, their years of control, they didn't materialize into anything. They've had now, again, I think a near decade is enough time to see how you're doing from a farm system standpoint. I think it's enough time to see how you do with free agent signings. I think they've been okay there. Like, I think they're pretty good at signing free agents.
Especially pitchers. Like, they made the right call, and maybe their hand was forced on the
Robbie Ray
thing.
The vaccine
Kevin
thing kind of.
Gausman. Yeah. But apparently, I don't know. It depends on who you ask.
They liked Gausman more. I think that's pretty clear. That they liked Robbie Ray and that they were interested in it, but that Gausman was always their guy.
And honestly, the trade for Jose Barrios was a good one, and the extension.
Sure. I would say trades, though, have been mixed results.
For sure.
Like, you traded Teoscar Hernandez
for
Eric Swanson.
Adam Acca was back pitching by the end of the year.
Yeah, amazing. That's really, I'm just saying, you've been mixed, let's say.
Yeah.
Your first trade deadline that you did get to sell, you took the best left-handed starter on the market and you turned him into Drury and who was it?
Wasn't that Billy McKinney?
Yes, it was. It was Billy McKinney. That was it. It was like you looked at Billy McKinney.
Who didn't?
Who the A's actually went out and acquired to be like, this guy is perfect for us tanking.
Yeah.
This guy is exactly what we need in the middle of our lineup to throw a season
Billy
away.
McKinney.
Like, you've had all the time. I don't know what's left.
No, there's nothing. It's just, I think it's all a contractual thing, right? Like, and it's part of it is also the contractual situation of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, that switching midstream on those guys, because that's the most important thing. Like, nothing else matters. I asked this question earlier.
But aren't you, if you're them, aren't you asking, hey, how are you even going to be here? Like, or do they care? Like,
nah,
just about the money with these guys, not
exactly.
The vision here.
Yeah. Yeah, but having a history of negotiations and knowing where you stand from a money standpoint. Like, okay, if I told you Blue Jays could win the offseason, they could have a bunch of short-term deals with, like, a bunch of 30-year-old guys. Like, and you really do have yourself convinced, and it's like Kenley Jansen, some high-risk, like, older guys on shorter-term deals. But you look good in 2025. You're like, oh, they did it. They patched it together, but there's no Vlad extension. Or you have a lesser offseason, but you get the Vlad 10-year extension.
Lesser.
Yeah, right? Like, obviously, that's the number one priority for these guys. But yeah, there is an obvious path to getting back to the playoffs in 2025.
Yeah,
the freaking Detroit Tigers are there.
Again, I hate when you disparage my Tigers. I've defended them on the phone to you multiple times.
Scooble and Chaos. Chaos is starting today.
You haven't watched them. Like, it's fine. You don't. Yeah. You're baseball casual.
You think they're going to win the World Series?
I don't, but I do think that they're... You think everybody sucks. That's your whole stance on every baseball team every year. No. Well, yeah, that's not up for debate. That's just done. That's been proven out. Like, we have enough sample size on that. Like, we know.
The jury has returned.
Yeah, exactly. It's case closed. Anyway, you say every baseball team sucks. There's no one that.
Well, that's because everybody does suck.
Yeah, but it's annoying when you do this because it's like.
No. Not everybody sucks. Guardians, good. Yankees, good-ish. Dodgers,
dude,
good.
No.
Padres are good.
No.
Phillies, good.
Yeah, I like the Phillies too.
Everybody, but you don't have to be good to make the playoffs anymore.
I don't want to get on a side tangent here, but I actually do want to bring this up with you later. I kind of think we've really hurt baseball. Like, we've always talked about how it's hard to debate some of the players because of numbers and analytics.
Yeah.
Right? And just being able to go, well, actually, his Fangraphs war, it just ends everything, right? Like, Dalton Varsho, pretty disappointing as a Blue Jay, I would say. Mm-hmm. And yet some people, if you look at the Fangraphs war, he's the best defensive. And I'm like, okay, I guess. No, I guess this the outfielder with the, you know, sub-700 OPS.
I think he finished exactly 700, didn't
this
he?
Year? Yeah, okay, that's good. Either way, like, as a Blue Jay, what's his OPS? It's sub-700.
Oh, yeah, he was awful last year.
Yeah, so the Blue Jay with a sub-700 OPS, there's some people who are, like, telling me, it's like, what an amazing trade that was. He's so good at defense. I'm like, yeah, I think so, too. But, you know, I don't know. I kind of always thought that was a thing, that you could get good defensive players much more easily than...
Bradley Zimmer was right there.
Anyway, I just, whatever. You can't even discuss it because it's like, Fangraphs war. Okay, whatever. The baseball playoffs, to me, have lost a little bit of luster because of this conversation of sample size, and like randomness. And I think it diminishes some of the like special feats of the players. Like, Tarik Skubal goes out there yesterday and he's just unreal. Like, works himself out of jams. You know, he's throwing 100. He's breaking off that curveball. He's shutting down a team that has gone to 7 straight ALCSs in a row, which I also think is one of the most underrated things in sports right now. Like, I know they cheated, but the fact that that's not, like, celebrated more as a what an accomplishment, like, 7 straight times.
Like, imagine the Andy Reid Eagles actually, like, won a couple of Super Bowls.
But it's like 7 straight times these guys have gone to the American League Championship game. And we're just kind of like, of course they have. Like, ho-hum, keep it moving.
Yeah.
Blue Jays make it to some wild card rounds. We're like, keep the management for a decade. I don't know. Maybe it's just a personal feel, but this randomness element of it and like the sample size stuff.
No, but like I do think
makes me feel like some of it's less special.
No, it is special because I think there are guys, and I mean, just Yordan Alvarez is just good. End of sentence. Regular season, playoffs, whatever. Bryce Harper's just good. End of sentence. Regular season, playoffs, whatever. But those guys, because they have special playoff moments, I think we do view them in different lights. And I do think they're like, this is a time of year where you do, quite factually, they throw out the regular season stats, right? Like, everything starts from scratch again when you get to the postseason. I still think there's an element of specialness.
I'm not saying there isn't. I'm saying that it does feel sometimes a little dissipated when I'm watching it. Like, oh, it's Tim Robbins. Random, you know, just, hey, it's all random. It's just baseball.
It's not, though. Like, here's the thing. Like, last year's World Series was kind of random with two wild card teams playing in it, and especially the 84 win Diamondbacks who missed the playoffs. Both teams missed the playoffs. But, like, the Rangers didn't feel like an undeserved champion, right? They had Corey Seager, they had Marcus Semien, they had Nathan Eovaldi. They had, like...
Jordan Montgomery, who...
Yeah. But you go through, like, the recent World Series matchups, like... Yeah. Ultimately, you do get to a pretty representative. I don't think we're going to have the Detroit Tigers the World Series.
If you would just
Royals,
like, I'd be fine with
it. The Royals. Okay, fine. I don't. Yeah. The Royals, like, they had a couple of starters at least.
I know. But, man, I'm telling you.
Seth Lugo going today.
Like, I've been saying this all year long. I really have been. And it's not like now it looks like. Oh, what? Who cares? Of course, he's the AL, like he's the pitching Triple Crown winner. But you know, I've been on the Tarik Skubal train. Like I watch his start. Like he's just he's special. He's different.
It's the thing you most want in the postseason because you can talk about a slugger and like home runs win games because you can't string together.
You take Tarik Skubal over anything else.
You win the game with the one guy, except for if you're Corbin Burns and your team scores no runs.
That's rude of the team to do that. Like he was unreal in that game too. They pulled him. They leave him till the seventh, eighth.
He went eighth.
Yeah, because he gave up a hit in the eighth, and then they were like, "All right, get out of here, you loser. You cost us this game." No, but if you were doing a draft of playoff performance, you take Tarik Skubal over Shohei Ohtani, no question.
No question.
If you were doing a draft today, he's a guaranteed win.
You need two wins in the wild card round. Yep. He provides you with like
he's a win,
the best chance to win 50% of those games.
Dude, the Tigers went up 3-0, and it was like game over.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Foley comes in here later, Foley living in a van down by the river, just botching it. Almost as God, he should have been. If he lost that game, how do you look Tarik Skubal in the eyes? Like, how do you get in the locker room after and be like,
"You can't." I mean, it was the biggest reason why there was belief in the Blue Jays' ability to go deep is because they had two of those guys. They had Alek Manoah and they had Kevin Gausman, and now they got no hope, no jobs, no cash. They got nothing.
Okay, so like I said, my question would be, what is it that you guys feel like you haven't like? Because I've heard that these guys are a little bit more defensive about their prospect evaluation, which is whatever, like, sure, injuries or whatever, you haven't produced anyone. Like, no one has come up here and been... Mm-hmm. Like, I got Jim Bowden later today. He wrote an article, you know, 25 players that broke out this season. And, hey, guess what? No Blue Jays. There's no Blue Jays on the list. Like, there's no breakout stars.
They're like, break-in stars.
Their breakouts are like Spencer Horowitz. Yeah. It's like, okay. And
Bojan broke in.
Everybody seems to be of the belief that Spencer Horowitz is getting traded anyway, that he's like ready to head to Oakland.
Yeah,
Pack your bags. I don't know, but whatever. Anyway,
sure. For Mason Miller, yeah.
No, for sure you would do that, but I don't think that's...
I guess part of that trade?
Oakland bending over backwards. Sacramento, whatever. Maybe it's because they're playing in a parking lot next year. Yeah. They're not really worried about it.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to your thing. What would you want to hear today? Like, what do you want to hear?
I would want to hear that, we accumulated assets, and we're in a better place prospect-wise than we were before the deadline, but our best way out of this thing is... throwing money at the problem. And I know we've gotten the backing of ownership to take our payroll to different levels before, and we're top 10, we're seventh in baseball in payroll. Here's what we got to do. We're top five, and I wish it wasn't the case, but it's the best way forward. It's the best way to hold on to those prospects at the deadline and continue to improve our team in the middle of the season. We're going to just throw money at the problem because we have that ability, and we're going to operate like a big market team. Like, they already do operate like a big market team, but, like, the biggest market teams. And the Juan Soto, I don't even want to hear his name this offseason because it's just so out. It's just so many Shohei vibes, right?
I was going to say, honestly, after
the... Outside of him. Let's just leave him aside. Everybody else. Just get all the bats. Get Christian Walker and Pete Alonso and Anthony Santander. Let's get them all. Because it's the only way forward. It really is. I mean, that would make you feel good about the fact that, okay, you did accumulate assets at the deadline. And maybe a couple more, months of seasoning in AAA. Will Wagner can be a contributor at the major league level. But God forbid you start the season with any of those guys factoring in.
I don't. It just kind of feels like such a cop-out
Yeah, it like, is. You screwed up.
If I'm Rodgers, mm-hmm. and they come to me being like, all we need is more money. Yeah. I'm like, what do you guys do? You didn't build a farm system.
It's already the situation.
You're not winning. Like, I'm giving you so much money.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't notice, but I just stroked a pretty big check the other day.
Yeah.
So you want me to give money to Vladdy, which mm-hmm. I have to do. Like, yes. We got to give Vladdy the money.
Yeah.
And now you just, your solution. Like, I could sign a fan off the street to do your job then. Like, oh, what? Your job is to tell me that William Adames is a free agent? Team. Yeah, like, make a fantasy
Corbin
free
Burns.
Agent team. Like, yeah. You're fired. Like, yeah. You're fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should be fired. Yeah, you're right. How are they not fired? What do you got to do to get fired? Like, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. 10 years of this, and it's just like, yeah,
it hasn't all been bad, but the position they put themselves in. Because you were supposed to do two things at once.
Yeah, man.
You said you were going to do the thing where it was like, you were like shark's teeth, right? Where like you lose the front ones and then the back ones just roll forward.
Waves, they said. It's not even just the waves thing. This is why I'm so critical of the Maple Leafs. Like people go like, well, their team is good and they've like won a lot of regular season games. And you don't look at, yeah, the Leafs should be evaluated differently when you inherit Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, William Nylander, and John Tavares signs of the organization. And you've got Morgan Riley already in the cupboards. Like, and you're the richest team in hockey. You can spend the most amount of money. Yeah. You should be criticized more harshly when you blow it. You're not the Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, you know, you're not falling over. You're not the Arizona, Utah hockey club
the
now.
The bar is not making the playoffs. It's not winning 89 games
exactly.
or 92 games. The playoffs are random, but you have no – that could have saved you. Like, if we were talking about a Blue Jays team – that won 105 games somewhere along the line, won a couple of division titles, and they didn't get done in the playoffs. It's even a little different story there.
Like, that's exactly it.
It's like the high watermark was, what, 92 wins that they had in 2022?
That's it. You just nailed it. You just said it hasn't all been bad, and I agree. Mm-hmm. Like, they've had some good years.
It probably won't be bad next year.
Dude,
my guess is that they're going to add enough that you're like, okay, they could be a playoff team.
Yeah, I guess again you're now grading on a scale
it is champagne problems to a degree.
But where I'm going with this is they should be criticized far more harshly
Correct.
For the fact that they got an unprecedented budget for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
They had a farm system that was in place that was outrageously good in terms of at least the way it was evaluated mm-hmm. around baseball and what they could have done with it. They inherited Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Mm-hmm. They got Bo Bichette in here. There was unbelievable excitement from the fan base where people could not believe it. They inherited, you know, like, they had this team. It was right there. And they turned it into the situation right now, which is the only real way forward is to try to go into free agency and build a fantasy team.
Yep.
And that, to me, is why it's like, you have to be fired. You had a thing. This wasn't something where, like, you were the Tigers or you were the Royals where you scrapped together an 89-win team and it was like bubblegum and toothpicks and you were like, wow, I can't believe you actually did this. We didn't give you a ton of resources. They were working from positions of strength across the board. Mm-hmm. The organization was like, yeah, we'll build the best spring training facilities. Yes, we'll give you every single advantage possible, whatever you guys want to do. You want to renovate the ballpark? We do too. But like, yes, we're going to get it done. We'll do it to your vision, Mark. And where are we today? With a fan base that's apathetic, with a baseball team that was dead last, with a farm system that's like 25th in baseball, and really only hopes of, again, asking ownership for more money. You're fired. You've got to be fired.
Remind me, because my memory's foggy, like how many games did Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. play before 2016? Oh, yeah, it was zero. They never played. They inherited a team with those were prospects when they arrived.
Yeah.
The best in the sport.
Yep.
Like, we laugh at, like, their lack of top 100 prospects.
Crazy. We were the Orioles.
The best in the sport. And it's not even like a Jackson Holliday thing where it's like, oh, okay, maybe he can be a thing. But, like, boy, sample was growing larger, and he's really just not impacting the game right out of the chute. These guys were awesome from the get-go. Like, Bo more than Vlad. Like, Vlad was good, but Bo was unbelievable offensively to start, like right out of the gates, and you turned it into a couple of playoff appearances and some good seasons, but
embarrassing losses, really.
embarrassing losses, and some of them, like, even when we're talking about the Marcus Semien stuff, it's like, yeah, you know, that was more bubblegum, and, like, that was a great circumstance, yeah. And you capitalized on the one-year deal for him, but you couldn't retain him, and God forbid you compete with the Rangers for a guy that set the record for home runs by a second baseman. But, yeah, that you've turned it into this, which is, again, it's not... I can't imagine an offseason that goes, unless, again, there's a philosophical change. I can't imagine an offseason where they don't add enough guys that you're like, yeah, they can make the playoffs. And it'll be an interesting team to watch in 2025 to see if they can overachieve. And maybe, you know, by some miracle, they win the division or whatever. Yeah. But what was the goal? What? The things that you were given when they arrived after Alex Anthopoulos, with what was below the surface. I mean, is there another Major League Baseball executive that would have chosen some other scenario to land in other than Toronto?
Yeah.
Especially considering the financial resources that were available. And now maybe they're available in Baltimore, but they weren't at the time when they were building this.
Yeah.
They had everything. It was the perfect circumstance. Yep,
that's what I'm saying. That's why it's graded more harshly.
It should be.
Perfect circumstances. You didn't come in and inherit the Bad News Bears and make it into a plucky, scrappy, likable team.
No, and sorry that you didn't get to rebuild it on your timeline.
Yeah, like
you had to go play you know, decrepit Jose Bautista, which he was in 2016.
Imagine
but you got all the way to the American League Championship Series.
I know.
Against a very flawed Cleveland team and Ryan Merritt. Like, so sorry.
Yeah. So sorry. Everyone's sorry. To go back to the segment, which is nothing matters, but what do you want to hear today? I want to hear what the tone is from Shapiro. Like, we've heard him speak enough times where, again, I like to joke now, he's like, that's a question for Ross. He loves that one. Like, that's a question for Ross. Ross will dig in on that one later, and then Ross doesn't dig in on that at all. But last year he called the season... I don't know why I haven't Googled this. I thought about yesterday. But he called it it wasn't a slog, but he was like one of the most difficult watches that he's ever had as an executive. Mm-hmm. And he was like, we got to figure this out. And they talked about communication issues and all this different stuff. They go into the season with just thoughts of positive regression. Mm-hmm. And seemingly, like, if you're bringing the band back together now, like, again, it's like, how do you justify this, like, tonally? If you're him... I would guess the actual only way is to be like complete righteous indignation, like just don't care.
How can you though? What? Saying like, yeah, you know what? We bet on internal improvements and I guess I went upside down, but our process was good.
But that's what I'm saying is I don't know what he tries to strike in terms of a tone because he already put like his hands up and went, we were so terrible last year.
Yeah.
Like we made it to the playoffs for sure. There were some wins in the season, but like we felt what you as the fans felt. Mm-hmm. And yet you still proceeded with like the course of action that you
Daniel
did, which was
Vogelbach.
That's what I'm saying.
Daniel Vogelbach was literally
you couldn't hit.
It was a part of the plan.
Dude, you couldn't hit a lick. You had no home runs.
Half their games, they scored three or fewer runs.
You had no home runs, and then this year you finished bottom five in home runs and in the bottom half of the league in OPS, bottom half of the league. Go across the
system. One of the worst offensive seasons in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, so you saw that year. You heard the frustration as a fan, but you acknowledge it. Like, you're on record having acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. Like, had he not said it where he went, you know—
This was
we still
better.
Made the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like you guys didn't realize that this offense was good, and there were numbers to suggest it was better than it looked.
Right, like remember when Kyle Dubas defended Cody Ceci, and he was like, you guys don't have the real numbers. Yeah. And then they got rid of him. They were like, get out of town.
Yeah.
Go ruin everything for the Oilers. He had the mea culpa. Mm-hmm. He admitted that it was a real tough season, and then he went with the same group, and now he's sitting here today— at the dais in front of everyone.
Yeah.
And he has to go, so yeah, I know what I said before, but also this one was actually worse because we didn't even make the playoffs and we didn't get any wins. And our fan base checked out the second the trade deadline was over. Yeah, so turns out this was worse. And what I've learned from it is ...
Yeah, there has to be an acknowledgement of how bad it is. And like the tone stuff is, like, I don't know. He was a little bit different in tone at the deadline when he was like more combative.
I was going to say he was kind of, he was like, I'm mad. I'm not.
He did acknowledge like, it's really bad. Like he did say that. But yeah, there needs to
a
be
a grind is what he called last
year. Yeah. There has to be an acknowledgement that the offense needs a total turnover, like needs like three significant bats at the very minimum. And again, the only way I can see forward to doing that is overspending and being in a situation risk-wise where you wouldn't ideally like to be.
Yeah.
But it's your only way forward. I don't even know what you would point to say that, like, you know, I had Caitlin McGrath on the other day. And
you would
say
Bo. You'd be like, well, Bo would get a full healthy season.
Yeah.
And that would be the big one.
Yeah.
And now you know Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is different. Oh, and Alejandro Kirk started to turn it on. And now you feel like more confident in those three guys.
No, I had Caitlin McGrath on the other day, and I agreed with a lot of what she said. But she said, like, oh, this is just kind of like one of those seasons where everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I was like,
is it?
Like, what was not predictable here? It's like, oh, Alec Manoah was hurt. Yeah. Okay. Who counted on Alec Manoah being anything? Like, Bo Bichette is the one thing. It's like, who could have? That's one guy.
That's one thing that happened.
Vlad exceeded expectations, if it's at all possible, considering what he did last season. Oh, my God. George Springer is this now.
Like, he's old, which he was. We all said he would be.
Dalton Varsho? Okay, this is Dalton Varsho, and that's a good player. It's not maybe what you could have hoped for, but everything played out according. Hey, the rotation took a step
back. Kevin Kiermaier didn't turn out to actually be one of the better offensive guys on the team. It's like, what are we talking about
here? Hey, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was actually better really than good. I ever anticipated him being. And Alejandro Kirk is not an all-star anymore.
I can't even figure out, like, outside of Bo, what the, like, yeah, Manoah was always like a luxury item.
No, I don't know.
Like, yeah,
what
Gossman
was
didn't
unpredictable.
Start healthy, but there was nothing here.
Everybody
that was
could have anticipated a step backwards in the rotation, and the rotation was not the the bullpen underperformed. That's the deal. Like, Jimmy Garcia was good when he was healthy. Yeah, he got hurt a little bit. They were already out of contention by the time he got hurt.
Yeah,
it's like Chad Green was really, really good. And filled in, like, Jordan Romano got hurt. Again, nature of the position. Mm-hmm. Eric Swanson. This is a guy, when they acquired him from the Mariners, who wasn't pitching in leverage. Like, you turned him in. It was, like, an incredible coup last season when it's like, you felt good about Eric Swanson in the eighth inning.
I actually love those guys. They're always like, hey, this guy that we got wasn't really pitching in leverage in his former stop, but we feel like we actually know better, having not had him in our building, that he's going to be more capable of handling a better situation.
Yeah, and as much as the bullpen, like, statistically was the worst part of the Toronto Blue Jays this season, they were 29th in ERA, only ahead of the Colorado Rockies, and behind the White Sox, the offense was the bigger problem because the bullpen had no leads to blow. Like, go back to all the losses at the beginning of the season. It's like, bullpen was bad, sure. Weren't a bunch of blown saves. They were, like, middle of the pack in bullpen losses because they just scored no runs. Yeah, no, this was not a star-crossed season. This is not something unpredictable or unprecedented. This is not Mike McDaniel getting a pass because Tua got hurt, and even in that situation, because he had one healthy season, you're supposed to. Anyways, this is not something where you get a pass at all.
Well, and the other one that I don't think anybody's brought this up, because it is more money, but Hicks essentially got, like, Yariel Rodriguez got Jordan Hicks's money. Like, one guy, I think, was $35 or $36 million in Yariel Rodriguez, and Jordan Hicks, I think, was $40-something million.
I mean, the Giants did fire their general manager as well.
Yeah, but Hicks was good. Like, he started for them. He was awesome. Like, he was—I'm just saying, like, he played essentially the Yariel Rodriguez role, where it was like, hey, here's a bunch of starts, and then we're going to move you to the bullpen.
I mean, he did finish the season with an ERA plus under one. It was a 94.
Yeah. He
started 20 games.
He started 20, but look at his actual number. Like, he had to dial back the amount of starts, and then they started to cool him off and watch the innings. Anyway, I thought that this season, this should have been the all-in year. Like, it's just strange that we went from, like, looking at this deadline where everyone thought, hey, why is Atkins even handling the responsibilities because he's obviously got to be fired, to, like, hey, he's out there speaking today, and it's no question as to him coming back. There doesn't seem to be anything, and we're just like, okay, whatever. Oh, I guess because of the contracts. Like, who cares about the contracts?
Yeah, no, everybody should be fired. Like, just on merit?
Yeah.
That's the thing I would love is someone I imagine will ask Mark Shapiro to defend his track record over the last 8 years.
But they're good at that because they've done that the entire time. And he's like, I know I'm established in baseball. We feel like we've made a lot of progress. We've seen young guys, and he's going to go like, Bowden Francis working out this year and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. still.
Yeah, that was a good trade. Rowdy Tellez.
You mentioned this offseason and kind of where you start.
Yeah.
I actually think that there was a real flirtation last year with Willy Adames.
Yeah.
I think the number one thing you have to do is trade Bo Bichette. People go like, you can't trade Bo. You can't get the value for him. Like, the Padres traded Juan Soto. And yes, did they get Michael King back? For sure. But they made the playoffs and their team move forward. The Brewers traded Corbin Burns. Mm-hmm. Like, they, and I'm actually not sure what they got back for Corbin Burns, but you can Google that for me. But, like, good teams have moved off of good players who are in contract years and made sure that they don't just walk for nothing when the contractual situation doesn't make sense. And, like, the idea that you should just throw Bo Bichette a contract extension and just put money, good, throw good money after bad when I don't think Bo should be the long-term shortstop of this organization. Like, it's just, if you want to be a defensive team, that's not who he is. I think that your number one priority actually has to be getting Vladdy done, but then number two is just finding a way to change the look of your franchise, move off a bow, try to sign Willy Adames, who you had a big crush on, make him your new Kevin Gausman, and then spread the whatever assets you get for Bo around and try to build out the rest of the baseball team from there. But, like, that's got to be number two, is you got to have a bit of a different look for this team. And I think that they've got to acknowledge that those two guys is, like, the middle of your offense core. It's time for a change.
Yeah, by the way, the Brewers got D.L. Hall, who was a big pitching prospect at the time, but had an ERA over 5 this year for the Brewers, and Joey Ortiz, who
plays for them.
Yeah, OPS 726.
I was going to say he's like their 9-hole guy, but...
Yeah, neither is Corbin Burns, but yeah, yada, yada, yada. I like Willy Adames. I like people that hit home runs. Like, that has to be the priority. Like, I don't know...
Teams do that and have done that.
Yeah.
And have survived it. And there's kind of this, like, to me anyways, strong push from everyone. Like, baseball people, Blue Jays people, whatever, that it's like, oh, you can't trade Bo Bichette because you can't lose the trade. It's like, you can lose the trade. It's better than losing a full season and then getting nothing for him when you already have a depleted farm system. And frankly, his position is one that... You could actually find an upgrade on in free agency.
Yeah, I think Willy Adames does that. I mean, defensively, he's a far superior player. Yeah. His power, he knows the division, clutch. Obviously. Yeah, obviously, age difference there.
Sure.
And that's a deal, and as all free agent deals are.
Age,
like,
difference,
it's not,
is how you miss on Jaden Daniels. You know, you get draft Caleb
Williams. That's, okay, yeah, no, also that. Great.
That's fine.
Caleb
Williams going to be fine, Bears fans.
The other plan where it's like Vlad gets the extension, but like Bo, you're hoping for internal improvement, and then you just cross the bridge when you either are out of contention and you trade him at the deadline, or
you turn him into Josh Donaldson 2.0. You come in with Josh Donaldson, the bad trade where you could have got Jack Flaherty, and you go out with Bo Bichette where you
end up. Bo is much younger than Josh Donaldson was.
Yeah, what I'm saying is you end up doing a deadline deal where you get the new Julian Merriweather.
Is still kicking around. But yeah, no, it seems like an untenable situation. Everybody, every insider that I've ever asked, and you can ask
Jim Bowden
later, and I think he said it explicitly, that he still has the same value as if he were healthy and had a good season. I think most people, and as they should, viewed this past year as total outlier. If that's the case, yeah.
That's been my position on it. It's like, he's had the track record that's been pretty clear.
Yeah, anyway, physically, he wasn't the same guy.
I would want to use the year before you give him the big contract extension, I would still want to bring him in if I was another team looking for offense and looking to kind of buy low on someone who could be a cornerstone piece of your franchise. Anyway, like, it's a risky trade. It could look bad 5 years from now. I'm not saying that it's like a no-brainer. It doesn't come with complications. I just think that for where the Blue Jays are at and what's happened here, he just represents a different path forward. Anyways, let's take a quick break. I did mention Jordan Montgomery, but yeah, maybe I'll mention that quote, but is there actually a bigger hole on the roster than the offense? Hold on, that's next.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So Jim Bowden in a few minutes. I turned on my mic right as he coughed. You did the professional thing. I did it right before. It's like,
well, you didn't know I was going to cough. I was across the room. I don't know if people heard that.
Production. Oh yeah, production staff's like,
oh yeah. You. So this is like your 2-hour show. So like, we're not up against the clock, but we are though. You got to take the break at the correct time.
Yeah, but. Do I?
Yeah, you do.
I know. Bosses are listening. You know how many texts and calls and
things? Teletypes, faxes.
What is a teletype?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But they do, and they were the ones receiving them.
I know what a Teletubby is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, different thing.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that's the closest thing I know to what teletype is.
Well, that was informative. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, this is my show. This is what you get here. Still working through a concussion. So I can't remember anything. I'm genuinely afraid same guy.
This is going to serious down. I don't like
that. Yeah, that's the scariest thing to me.
Yeah. Matt, you called for Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins to be fired? That sounds like...
Me? Yeah.
Yeah. It's no different. What's different?
By the way, I am a continuity guy, but we in Toronto are now like taking this to the extreme with all three of the major sports.
Yep.
We're like, maybe year 12 of Brendan Shanahan will be the one.
At least for the Raptors, though, there was the ultimate success, right? Yeah. And it only goes, I was surprised, it only goes to 2026. I thought it was like the 50-year deal.
No. Yeah. Remember we used to rank, like, the confidence in these?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know how we would rank them.
Well, it's just so unknown with the tri-living. Like,
No, but I still view I guess the...
Presidents?
Presidents matter.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, you're ranking...
Well, you don't think presidents matter? No, I'm asking... Don't...
I'm asking what we're ranking.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Throw your vote away, kids.
It's a hard... I mean...
Trump or Kamala? Go on record.
Certainly not Mark Shapiro.
Yeah.
Honestly, that one's the easy one. It's like Mark Shapiro dead last, right?
Yeah.
Has to be. Despite the fact that the Raptors are in Nowheresville and like who the hell knows? Again, flags fly forever.
I know.
He did a thing once.
No, yeah, like for sure. He did that one thing and then from that point forward he was like, I'm not doing anything good. I'm done. Yeah. He's like my producers, where it's like when they book a guest, they're like, I'm sure that you'll never need another one again. We're going camping. Yeah.
It's one of those one day weeks, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So anyway, do you see the Jordan Montgomery quote?
Yeah, I
mentioned it earlier.
Of course. I saw
it. So for those of you that didn't see it, the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks, this team missed the playoffs after being in the World Series last year, and they missed it by a game, right?
They won 5 more games than they did last season and still missed it. It would have been the second wildcard team in the American League.
But you could really make the case that they missed it because of their big free agent signing that completely screwed them over with a 6.23 ERA, who signed a 2-year, $47.5 million contract. Jordan Montgomery... Ken Kendricks is the name of the guy. He said, quote, looking back in hindsight, a horrible decision to have invested that money in a guy that performed as poorly as he did. It was our biggest mistake this season from a talent standpoint, and I'm the perpetrator of that, end quote. So apparently this guy did get involved as an owner and was like, hey, Jordan Montgomery's still out there. Why don't we go and get him? I think that's kind of what you want from your owner normally, where you see a free agent and you're willing to spend more money. It did backfire. They probably should have sat him, though, so that he didn't get this option that kicked in based on a certain number of starts. Like, that's the actual part I don't understand.
Oh, it was a vesting option? I thought it was it was a player option through and through. Because he eventually did. They're like, enough! No. To the bullpen, they sent Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, like, remember, it was him and Blake Snell.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, both of these guys. It's like, to get it that wrong. Like, if you sign Blake Snell, you're in the playoffs right now, and people are going, oh, my God, you have Zach Gallen and Blake Snell.
Yeah, you screwed up. Yeah,
Do you like it? I love this.
I have no problem with it. I mean, are there some ill feelings toward, like, is Jordan Montgomery going to be upset? So what? Like, that's what money's for.
Of course. I was just thinking the same thing. It's like, what, you think there's a free agent that's going to show up in Arizona, and he's going to be like, what if I take this money and I suck? I'm not going to say I did, right? You're not going to tell everyone.
You're going to make excuses for me, like, right?
No, sure, baby. Just sign it. Just
yeah.
Sign it. Yeah. No, I won't say that.
And what's the other side of that debate, though, too? It's like that is an unequivocal, like, that's true.
Yeah.
They missed the playoffs by a game. Their big offseason pitching acquisition was beyond unplayably bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, okay, sorry, he's a Diamondback next season. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have that not be the case by just letting him go and eating the money, but I imagine you're not going to do that. And so he gets $24 million to be sour at the owner. And the GM did.
It must be so funny to show up to work, though.
Yeah.
But apparently he showed up, like, really out of shape, and I know he's, like, already, like, a big kind of, you know.
Bad.
Montgomery's not Mr. Universe, but... Yeah.
I did like him taking a shot at Scott Boras, though.
Yeah. See, like, I like this guy. I'm now like.
No, Montgomery did. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm Boras, obviously screwed me.
But I'm just saying Scott I Boras. Like this owner. Like, I really like.
Yeah, but you're always trying to suck up to billionaires.
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying.
How else am I ever going to get on, like, a yacht?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you watch Succession? Yeah, didn't it look cool?
Yeah.
Like, they had the worst family ever, and it was just complete dysfunction. And their dad didn't love them, but still, they were like, no, I'm taking the chopper somewhere. You're like, I would trade my family liking each other for that.
Obviously, the lesson of that show was that
it's money is awesome.
Yeah.
And that was the whole point.
It is the most important thing. Yeah. They were like, and it obviously equates to happiness.
I found out my dad died in a no frills.
Yeah.
I think it would be way better to find out your dad died when you're on a, like, private jet.
I'm just saying,
if I would have had the choices, me standing in a no-frills grocery line trying not to cry versus being on a private jet, kind of a no-brainer. Anyway, thanks for your time, Ben. Jim Bowden next. We're an hour out from Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins speaking to the media today. I think, Shapiro's going to go first. Again, he only spoke once this year, and it was after the trade deadline. Couple weeks after, pretty combative. That was one of the things that I think a lot of us noticed. Very defensive of Ross Atkins, their track record, their farm system, their trades, which again was kind of surprising given that they finished last season with a really embarrassing playoff exit, right? They were questioned about their communication, their offense, their team building, their trades. Damn near everything. And Shapiro acknowledged that the season was a grind, but then proceeded to go into the following year with essentially the same roster. Yes, did they try to get Shohei Ohtani? Absolutely. Was he ever going to come here? Did he really like the spring training facility that much that he was going to forego living in Los Angeles? I don't know. In hindsight, it seems like a bit of a fool's errand. In the moment, it felt like, holy crap, they really did have a chance. I've always defended the fact that there wasn't really a ton they could have done in free agency last year, but nonetheless, they were in a position with their farm system where they didn't really have a ton of wiggle room with trades. But they go into this year, they run it all back, they bring back the same team, and so tonally, I am very curious to hear what a guy has to say after acknowledging last year was a grind. It's like, surely the year where you don't make the playoffs, you finish dead last, and the fan base really became apathetic after the trade deadline had to be somewhat worse. Anyways, let's ask somebody who actually knows things and whose opinion you should value. A former MLB GM for 16 seasons, former executive of the year, now with MLB, or he's an MLB analyst and insider for CBS, The Athletic, SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio, and he's kind enough to join our show. It's Jim Bowden. How's it going, man? How are you?
I'm doing fine, Taker. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to hear today's media conference, even though I feel as though these things matter less than ever because executives, like, what is the responsibility of an executive today? Like, you know, you've sat in this seat. You know what this is like. These exit interviews, like, what is your goal here?
Be accountable. Look, your team is what your record is. Don't spin it. Don't pretend it's not what it is. Your record is who you are. Own it. Go to the podium and tell the fans the truth because they know the truth. So tell them. You failed.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't done your job. You're not competitive. You got a lot of work to do to turn things around and tell the fan base you're going to do everything you can this winter to do that. Go ahead and tell the fan base you're going to do what you can to extend both Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette long term and add pieces around them to try to turn this thing around in one off season.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to do because you can't spin the truth. you can't spin where you're at. Not a good farm system. Yes, I like Ricky Tiedemann. Yeah, maybe Aroldis Martinez becomes a player. I don't know. Uh-huh. But it's not a good farm system. It's not a good major league team. It's not a good lineup. It's not a good bullpen. And the lineup and the bullpen have to be fixed this winter. You don't have a lot to trade. That means you have to play checkbook baseball. Tell the people today that you have the support of ownership. You made a run at Ohtani last year. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. But because we showed you last year, we do have the financial wherewithal if we decide to use it, and let the fans know you're going to use it. It's put up or shut up time for this administration. It's where they're at. We saw in St. Louis the announcement that John Mozeliak's last year will be 2025, and his last year will be setting it up for the next executive, Chaim Bloom, mm-hmm. who signed a five-year contract. Cardinals ran out of time. The team expired. They're going to trade their veterans this offseason. They're going to offer Sonny Gray. They're going to offer Nolan Arenado. They're going to let Paul Goldschmidt walk, and they're going to reset. So Toronto's got two choices. You either reset, but if you did that, you should have done that at the trade deadline. If you did that, that's the trade deadline is when you trade Vladimir Guerrero Jr., not now. You won't get the same thing you could have gotten back then. It was an absolute seller's market. You chose not to because – you know, you think you can turn it around this winter. You think you can reboot it. So you got to do it. And look, words and promises will work nothing with the Blue Jays fans. It doesn't work. The only thing that works is action, right? You don't need to hear an executive speak or talk to know what happened last year. And you don't need them to give you false promises now. What you want to see is results. Mm-hmm. And I think at the press conference today, be accountable and set out your plan for the winter and then execute it. And they're only going to care about the execution.
Yeah, listen, I think you nailed that answer. And I think a lot of fans, as much as the words don't matter, and yes, the action is paramount, I think that there would be something to them showing some accountability. The problem is that the accountability for this fan base now no longer comes in words. It was supposed to come in the form of, hey, listen, it was questionable as to whether you should keep Ross Atkins last year. Now he's speaking today, which basically leads you to assume he'll be back again next year. Why do you think Mark is reluctant to get a different set of eyes on this baseball team when, yeah, these guys kind of doubled down on their vision this year and it resulted in a last place finish?
You know, it's a great question. I think that a lot of times you're a family in the front office and you want to protect. It's hard to fire your close friend.
That's why you don't do mixed family and business. That's why there's that quote.
Yeah, no, it's true. Because let's look at the Seattle situation. Jerry DePoto and Scott Service were like in each other's weddings. They're like best friends. Jerry had to fire him this year down the stretch. And wishes he had done it earlier. He didn't do it earlier because they were friends. And it's hard to fire a friend. It just is. But if you're going to hire a friend, you got to treat your friend like anybody else because it's a business. It's not about a friendship or a fraternity. It's just not. And when the Seattle fired Scott Service and brought in Dan Wilson and put Edgar Martinez downstairs and traded for Justin Turner, it was the action that changed Seattle and gave them a better chance to win. And in fact, if the White Sox had not been so bad – And the Royals and Tigers and Twins didn't all get to go 12-1 against Chicago. Seattle was a playoff team this year. Yep. They would have gotten in if they got to go 12-1 against Chicago. They just didn't get to play them 13 times because wrong division. And so I bring that up because, you know, it takes action. And unfortunately, you know, when you're living with people, the hardest thing I did, and I was a GM for 16 years, and I had to fire extremely talented, championship-level, veteran baseball people. And it's the hardest thing in the world to do. And you want to hope it doesn't hurt your relationship lifetime, but it does. No one likes to be fired. Everybody remembers when you're fired. It's not a good feeling, and it's hard to go out to dinner with the person you fired again.
Yeah.
So you lose a friend. You do. It's hard. So, but you have to do what you have to do. Or you go down with that person.
Yeah.
Okay? And that can happen too. You know, maybe they're a package deal and then they're both going to win or lose this year and they're both going to come back after this year. They're both going to be gone by July. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this. There is no more pressure on any front office in Major League Baseball than there is on Toronto Blue Jays right now, right here this winter. No more pressure than what's going on north of the border. They've got to fix this team. Yeah. They got to win or they will not be there in 12 months.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just it seemed like this year that was the case. And now you've got this weird situation where you've got a lame duck president and by, you know, all intents and purposes, a lame duck GM. And I'm curious how you think that works. Like, the assumption here, if they're still on the job, is that if they do well, they can get extensions, I assume. Like, you know, so what, 1 year of playoffs? Like, you make the playoffs, you get contract extensions? Like, that's what ends up happening here? I don't know how you feel as a front office, how that affects your decision-making.
So I've been with owners who like to give the support to the executives and have them always under contract so they don't have the pressure, right?
Yeah.
I've worked for owners that want you to understand if you don't win, you're gone. Now, the way I operated in my career was the fact that I treated every day the same, whether I was under a one-day contract or a five-year contract, and I had both. It never bothered me, and I never looked at it that way. I always looked at it as a privilege and an honor. You're a steward of the organization. Do your best every day, and don't worry about yourself. Put the team first. Don't worry about your situation. I literally, you would not see a difference. But the way I had to learn how to do that was after year one as a GM, in which we finished in fifth place, 23 games out. And Marge Schott, the owner of the Reds at the time, called me into her office. And she said, Jim, I'm going to lay it out. I'm not going to fire you because you only got 1 year. But I'm going to tell you right now so you know. You have to finish in first next year or you're fired. Period. And if you don't like that, then you need to resign right now. And I said, I'll take it, and I appreciate you giving me one more year. And we finish in first place the next 2 years. Now, that pressure as a young person, and I was only 31 years old at the time, that pressure was actually good for me because I found every single possible way to turn it around, not with money, with intellect, and surrounding myself with the smartest baseball people possible, like Davey Johnson, Bobby Ballantyne, Jack McKeon, Bob Boone. Like, I just brought in all these executives and base and field people that knew how to win and had won world championships and surrounded myself with as many people as possible to find a way to friggin' win. But some people do better under comfort, some under the fire. For Mark and Ross, they've got to feel the pressure. And they look, it's a results-oriented business. I don't care how, and they're two of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Their character are both off the charts. They're great people. I'm just telling you, they're great humans. I don't care how great you are as a human being. Fan bases want to win. Ownership wants to win. You have to be accountable.
So
they're under the pressure. We'll see what they do. But I think as an owner, hey, they've had the comfort of long-term deals. This is where we are. Let me make them feel uncomfortable for a year and see what they can do.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of questions on this team because what they've been doing has not worked, period.
Yeah. Well, listen, and again, it's not that you mentioned just for comfort versus pressure. It's not a one size fits all for everyone. But what happened with you when you're 31 years old, you made a change. You brought in different voices. And so it's just a little strange that the changes that these guys seem to be making are, you know, assistant pitching coaches getting repurposed and changing the hitting coach. Like, you'd think that it would be a little bit more extensive than that. The part of that, though, that I'm curious about, I guess it is like an ownership mandate to win ultimately, because if they wanted them to strip it down, they probably would. But, yeah, that's the part of it that I would guess scares me a little bit as a fan is if you can't build a winner, like, how do you build a winner when you have so many problems with this roster? And knowing, like, you are lame duck, and so you've got that mandate to win, maybe you sacrifice some of the future of the franchise. Like, it feels like you're kind of in that position where there's only one route you can take.
Okay, so I made the point back in July, and that was your window to rebuild, right? That was it. I would have taken that window, right? So just watching this team in June and July, I didn't see this as a postseason team. And what concerned me even more was how good the Orioles' young core is. What concerns me even more is how good the Red Sox farm system core is that's coming, and they're on the doorstep, and you better watch out, and how poor the Blue Jays farm system is, and how good the Rays are at working their system, and how good the Yankees are at spending money. You know, you're in the toughest division, you know, long-term of any of the six divisions, in my opinion. And so for me, that, and I've said it, I hate to keep beating a dead horse because I've been saying it for a year and a half on these shows here in Toronto, is the fact that he either signed Guerrero and Bichette long-term a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, or you trade them, or you trade them this past July and you get seven or eight pieces for them that can help you build and reset and do it. To me, yeah, it's going to be a huge challenge because you don't have a lot to trade. You're going to have to fix it. You're going to have to fix it with checkbook baseball. And I'm not talking about going and getting the Ohtanis.
Yeah.
I'm talking about getting six players, you know, three for the lineup and three for the bullpen, and making smart moves. I mean, look how the Tigers built their bullpen, right? So I think your other point was the biggest one, which you talked about, you know, replacing the assistant pitch coach but not getting more voices. They need to beef up their front office.
Yeah.
With proven baseball minds that can help them understand why their farm system isn't better, to make them understand why, you know, they made a huge mistake in the Varsho deal because they overrated his hit tool. So why did that happen? So I think when you see mistakes in the front office, you have to ask yourself, you know, these are moves that might have worked 10 years ago, but some of these moves don't work today, and why are we missing it? What are we not doing that the other teams are doing? And bringing strength to the system. I mean, give credit to Bill DeWitt, who took Chaim Bloom from Boston to oversee the player development department because he understood the Cardinals weren't developing hitters. they weren't getting it done. So why? So they hired Chaim Bloom to go in there and consult and look at the system, and he came up with all the reasons why they haven't. And Chaim Bloom's work in Boston is about to appear at the big league level in Boston in the next 2 years. Yeah. And when it hits, it's going to be loud. It's going to be like the Orioles loud. They got their catcher Teal coming. They got their right fielder coming. They got their shortstop coming. Like it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's going to hit like thunder and lightning.
You know, it's interesting hearing you say this because I usually find when you continue to double down on problems. Like, this has been something for a while now. Again, the need for outside voices and change. Like, the Blue Jays have a really, tough farm system. It's not great. You mentioned that they have a couple of guys. They replenished it a little this deadline with selling off some of their veteran pieces. But they've always had, again, this is a hearsay thing, is you get that reputation of smartest guys in the room when you do things differently and they're just not working and you continue to do it the same way. Like, you continue down this developmental path, you don't really change things, you get defensive of your guys, nothing changes. You do the Barrios thing in the playoffs last year, you say you're going to reevaluate your system and the way that you do things, your communication, it kind of ends up being the same this year. You keep the manager, all that different stuff. You mentioned that these are good people, and so, again, this isn't personal, but do they carry that reputation to a degree from your circles? The, hey, we're the smartest guys in the room, we're reluctant to change because we trust our process to a fault.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, when Mark Shapiro went upstairs to that top role, you know, he's not doing the daily grind, which is what got him the two Executive of the Year awards, right? And, you know, for me, the game has changed completely over the last 3 years, let alone the last five, the last 10. It's a totally different game. What worked for Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins 3 years ago doesn't work now. John Mozeliak learned that in St. Louis. The game is completely changing at such a rapid pace. You have to keep up with it. You know, when you look at the success the Dodgers have, it's not just because they spent $1 billion on two players, which helps. I get that. But they're always bringing in new minds. Their preparation for games is far superior than everybody else's. Smart people like Houston went out and got people from Tampa to bring all of their knowledge to Houston for them to utilize. That's when Houston was still ahead of the game anyway. They were still one of the elite, but they didn't rest on those laurels. They went and got more people. And that's one thing you have to continually to do. Like, one of the things I would do if I was Mark and Ross right now, I would hire Farhan Zaidi, who just got fired from the Giants. And I know people can argue, yeah, but Jim, he only had a winning record, too, of 6 years. I don't care. I know what Farhan Zaidi knows. And Farhan Zaidi knows how the Los Angeles Dodgers operate because he and Andrew Friedman did it together. And I know what he can bring to the table which doesn't have to necessarily just be the result of the big league level. It's what you can do through your whole farm system. And the Giants farm system's got way better the last 2 years, but it doesn't show up, as you know, for 4 to 5 years. So bringing a mind like Farhan Zaidi right now and make him vice president of development and scouting, whatever you want to do, would bring two organizations' technology and advanced analytics to an organization that has their own and likes their own. But the one thing you have to fix, and the fans see the major league team, what you have to fix is the farm system and the scouting process.
100%.
That's what you got to fix. That's how you win. You can't win by continually band-aiding the big league club or playing checkbook baseball. It doesn't work. You know, when we all watch these teams in October, you're going to find it's the teams that are building from within for the nucleus, and then you add pieces to that.
Yeah.
And that's where Toronto has failed more than anything. It's not the major league club. It's the fact that the farm system's not developing all-star caliber players.
Yeah.
And haven't. And they're not in the pipeline. That's the problem. So it's not even all the decisions of the big league. Like, it's really hard as a GM. I've been there. It's really hard as a GM to make trades when you don't have anything to trade.
Yeah.
When you don't have the assets to trade, it's really hard to do that job. I mean, you got to be so creative. It's sickening. So for me, if I'm them, the biggest issue, the biggest problem you got to fix is the amateur draft and the international draft, because you can't keep failing those two things. That's your bread and butter. How do you think A.J. Preller has 3 million fans coming? They outdraw the St. Louis Cardinals now. It's not just because Peter Seidler spent the money on Manny Machado and Juan Soto. It's because he sits there and has such a great farm system that he can trade for everybody. He can make the trade for Darvish. He can make the trade for Blake Snell. He can make the trade for Musgrove. He can make the trade for Soto, and then he can trade Soto for more prospects. But he always has the prospects to trade. He can go get Lewis Arraez. He can go get Dylan Cease. Why? Because he's got the farm system. He couldn't make those trades if he was running Toronto.
Yep.
He can only make those trades because he spends his whole life building through the draft and through international scouting. That's how he wins. Everyone sees his big league result. His big league result is because he won with the amateurs. That's where Toronto is losing. That's where they need to fix.
Yeah, listen, I'm completely lockstep with you. And I actually remember last offseason when fans were talking about a Soto trade and what that could look like for Toronto. I was like, who are they giving up in this hypothetical trade? Because they've missed. And you think about how these guys came in here with the discussions with Alex Anthopoulos and the emptying of the cupboards and kind of where they're at right now. You're right. It's a huge problem for these guys. And again, it's one where you can't really solve it or prove that it is solved or fixed or whatever in the 1 year that they're doing. And so, yeah, as you call it, checkbook baseball, seems like that's going to be the offseason because, yeah, you know what you can't change in 1 year is from 2016 to, let's say, 2022, because give a couple of the other guys, you know, and there's more than one round, but these are their picks. TJ Zoik, Logan Warmouth, Nate Pearson, Jordan Groshans, Alek Manoah, Austin Martin, Gunnar Hoglund. Like, you know, you package all those guys together, what are you getting? Nothing. So that's pretty tough. That's a pretty tough track record for those guys over that tenure.
Yeah, it is. And you can't do it. And the other thing you have to understand, too, like when Alex Anthopoulos was criticized for emptying the cabinet, who did he actually give up?
Yeah, that's it.
For Troy Tulowitzki that hurt the and he knew that.
Jeff Hoffman was the best name. Now he's a reliever, you know? Like,
yeah, but we all knew that at the time. Yeah. And when he went over to Atlanta, he was able to take those – he got Matt Olson, got Sean Murray. He gave up some things to get it. But Alex has that ability to trade guys before everyone knows that they're not what you think they are.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back and look at prospect rankings from – you can just use MLB Pipeline or Baseball America or The Athletic. It was all those rankings. And go back over 10 years and look at how wrong they are. Look at how people were wrong, always going to be wrong. And when you look at Schwellenbach with Atlanta, go show me where he was in anyone's top 100. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere to be found. And here's one of the best pitchers. Where was Spencer Strider? Nobody had him. And so, you know, what you have to really know is not only what the prospects are in other teams that people don't know, but yet you better know your own players.
Yeah.
Right? You better know your own players because they're not what the public is seeing. The public's only seeing what the analysts see, and they're not at every game. So it's not a perfect thing. And when you talk to scouting directors and teams, they will absolutely mislead the media because they want to sell certain players, and they don't want you to know about certain players because that's their weapon they don't want to trade.
Yeah. So
that works.
It looks like it's going to be the checkbook is the way out of this for the team, because as of right now, it's not the farm system. It doesn't look like it's going to be trades. There's no bigger question for the Toronto Blue Jays than what they do with the two faces of the franchise right now and their future. So let's start with Vlad. He comes off this, you know, the real only, I guess, meaningful great thing about this Blue Jays season was that he transformed himself back into an MVP caliber player, especially in the second half of the season. He was outrageously good. What do you think happens with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this offseason? Does he get a contract extension? And if he does, what does it look like?
Well, for me, you've got only two choices. You either extend him and put a date on it or trade him. And you can't let him have his free agent year. Mm-hmm. Just play this through with me. Let's just say you don't extend Bichette and Guerrero and you don't trade him. You're going to get to July and you think someone's going to give you a lot for 2 months? No, they're not. No chance. Not going to happen. So then what's going to happen to the franchise if Bichette and Guerrero walk next year? Then what? What's the team going to look like? Take them out of the lineup for a minute. Tell me what it looks like.
I don't want to do this exercise. It's not very fun.
I know you don't, because it's going to be 7 years before you're relevant again.
Yeah.
So you got two choices. Sign them, and it's going to be whatever the market says. And quite frankly, the market's going to let you know. Mm-hmm. Pete Alonso is going to let you know, because Guerrero is a way better player than Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever Alonso's getting, you're getting more.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Vlad's waiting for not Pete Alonso, though, that he's waiting for Juan Soto?
Soto will reset the market.
Yeah.
Guerrero's not going to get Soto's deal. Guerrero's body type has made it difficult for the Blue Jays to commit the long term because of the risk that comes with it,
mm-hmm.
which I can understand. But if that's your position with him, then you have to trade him.
Yeah.
Because someone's going to pay him. Someone's going to give him those years. Someone's going to take that gamble. And I understand if you don't want to, that's fine. Then you got to turn him into four players.
Yeah. The trickier one is Bo, at least from my position, because it would seem like a no-brainer at this point, like given the way this team markets itself, the way that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has played, the way that he resonates with the fan base, the fact that, and again, guys say on record that they want to be here, and it's not always true, but with him, I do believe it. I think it just comes down to the dollars, right? Like, how much more are you paying him over Pete Alonso? How close is he asking to that Juan Soto contract? But Bo Bichette is murkier, right? Like, he has this injured season, a completely lost season. When he was healthy, he underperformed. We're not sure how much of it was a dip because of play versus injury. It's one of those ones. He flirted openly with teams like the Giants, which was very strange. He has gone on record also saying he wants to be a Blue Jay, but he's also someone that year over year talks about, you know, the desire to win and how he's sick of losing here and it's time for maturity and all this different stuff. There's been some buzz about his potentially actually wanting out from the market. What do you think happens with Bo Bichette? What have you heard about Bo Bichette? His value and the likelihood that Toronto ends up trading him this summer, because he kind of feels like the major trade piece that they have.
Okay, so this is my view.
Yeah.
Sign Bichette long-term right now because his value will never be lower than it is right now. His injury-filled year that he only played 81 games and only hit four home runs and only hit .225 is the best thing that ever happened to the Blue Jays. Because you can walk in there and give him lifetime security, and you can give him a 10-year deal right now that he never would have signed a year ago. And you absolutely do that. What Bichette is what he was from 21 to 23, okay? And that is a 300 hitter with 25 homers, the RBIs around 90, right? 15 stolen bases, leading the league in hits, which he did twice of those 3 years. That's who he is. Don't let the injury stand in the way. Is it better to move him to third base? Yeah, for me, yeah. I'd go ahead and do that now, get it over with, right after I gave him the 10-year deal. He's 26 years old. Sign him to 36. That way you don't have to give him the Machado deal that takes him to 41. And give it to him right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
He knows if he has another bad year, he's not getting paid next year. So you take the risk if you're Toronto, because this is going to be the cheapest you'll ever get them, and get it done and get Guerrero done. And let's move on. Let's build around them. We need two hitters around them. And all of a sudden you'll be relevant. That's it. Two hitters, and then build up the bullpen. You got the starting rotation. Bowden Francis coming back was huge, developing this year. That was big, right? So the starting pitching's there. You know, fix the bullpen. You can do it. It's not that hard. There's a lot of guys with great stuff. Use your scouting department to go find those guys that are in Double A, Triple A, or are pitching the fifth inning that can pitch the eighth inning. Yeah. Go get Will Vest from Detroit who can close. Like, go find those guys. They're out there. You can get them. And go get two bats and sign Bichette and Guerrero long term.
You've been really generous.
Otherwise.
Oh, sorry.
Otherwise, trade them. Yeah. A lot of fun. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, I really do appreciate it. I just want to ask you one more question before you go, because, you know, Bo and Vlad represent one thing. And again, this is generalities, because I'm sure, again, it comes down to agent and personality type, and a lot of different variables are at play with these things. But did you find it more or like difficult to deal with contracts like that, where you're dealing with a player with like a real track record in Bo Bichette, who believes he's the guy from those prime years that you mentioned, but you're trying to buy young, and then maybe he feels insulted? Or was it, you know, more difficult to deal with the guys like Vladdy, who are coming off of career years after a couple of dips, where you're trying to figure out, like, hey, you know, what is the actual value here? Like, in your experience, was it easier dealing with the guys who had come off of the dip seasons that were looking for that security, or the guys that were coming off of contract seasons where, you know, they earned it?
All contracts are really difficult to deal with, because the agents that's representing them are all really good at what they do. Mm-hmm. They're really good at positioning. They're really good at schooling their clients on what to say. And look, everybody views themselves that they're worth more than whatever's offered. I promise you, you're not getting paid what you think you deserve to be paid, because every person that's competitive kind of feels that way, right? And so that happens. I think the most important thing is having that relationship, working hard to understand what's important to the players, and then explaining intellectually why you are where you are and why they are where they are, and try to find common ground to get it done. But relationships and transparency is important. When you just saw the Giants sign Matt Chapman, it was Buster Posey that got involved here with his relationship with Chapman that actually put it over the finish line. And they were able to extend him without him getting to free agency. And so I just think it's important. Like with Guerrero, if it's length, I don't think anyone's going to argue the AAV. Mm-hmm. I think if the reason he's not signed has to be over length and the concerns of body. And I think it's okay if Toronto sits there and goes, look, we can't give you a 10-year deal, and this is why, and we're going to lay it out and try to find a compromise. You know, maybe the compromise is 6 years or 7 years, you know, but you got to be honest and be transparent, and let the player wants to know how much he's wanted and how much you want to be fair. And then the definition of fair, you got to get to a point where the player can accept where you want to be fair. The problem is, if I'm an agent and I'm being honest, I'm telling Bichette and Guerrero, look it. For Bichette, go have a big year. I'm going to get you way more next year.
Yeah.
And when 30 teams can come after you, just wait a year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell Vladdy, you can repeat this one more year, I may get you Soto's deal. I mean, as an agent, I'm 1 year away from free agency. So it's not easy to do these deals. But if the players want to be there, there is a way to get it done. And I think it's the biggest issue. As much as the Blue Jays need two more hitters and need to fix the bullpen, you have to take care of your star players first. You know, when I was in Cincinnati, I always took care of Barry Larkin first. When I was in Washington, I took care of Ryan Zimmerman first. That was extremely important, that you got to take care of your leaders. It's hard to build the rest of the team if you don't have the leaders completely on board on what the organization's trying to do.
You can read a lot of his work right now at The Athletic. You know, Juan Soto, 10 other impending MLB free agents with the most at stake in the playoffs. So if you are a Blue Jays fan, you want to know how they're going to play checkbook baseball, maybe one of those 10 names ends up coming here. Also got 10 disappointments for the 24 season, which Blue Jays did make that list. Didn't make the breakout list, but did make the disappointing list. Jim Bowden, again, 16 seasons as an MLB GM, former executive of the year, and now analyst for CBS, The Athletic, Sirius, and MLB Network Radio. Thanks again so much for your time. I always appreciate it.
My pleasure. Go Blue Jays.
Take care, Jim. Yeah, go Blue Jays. Okay, so coming off of that, If you can get Bo on a deal like that, I think it's clear you do it. Like, that is the better scenario. I would rather gamble on giving Bo Bichette the contract extension that is at a reduced rate that could turn out to be a real coup for you given his age and his track record. My issue is that he is this uber competitive guy, right? Like, if you were trying to envision players that would be comfortable betting on themselves and going to free agency, like, isn't that the, like, definition of Bo Bichette? I'm making assumptions here. I'm openly admitting this isn't based off of my inside knowledge of Bichette. Anything that I've ever heard has always been surrounded in, you know, nothing extremely clear. I've tried to base a lot of it off of, like, his actions and who he is and what he's shown us as a person. But yeah, this is a guy who likes to bet on himself. This is a guy who is he's a workaholic. That's how he was first introduced to us as a Blue Jay, was someone who worked his way into that position, who made himself undeniable. He's been really good. He's also someone who was hurt last year. He's got a dad who was a former big leaguer. He's been raised in this, like, he's not a kid that's from, you know, an impoverished country with the humble beginnings who needs to take a contract extension to set up, you know, his family and community for the next 20 years. Like, I based on who he is, I'd be pretty surprised if he was willing to sign a contract extension that we all looked at and went, wow, Bo really took the security. Maybe I'll be wrong. I can tell you right now, I would be thrilled to be. I would genuinely be thrilled to be. It just doesn't, working like I'm looking at FBI murder profile. It doesn't fit the profile. It doesn't fit the profile. It just doesn't. I don't see it. Vladdy, it does. And not because of, like, he's got a lot of the same things as Bo Bichette. But if you are Vlad, you are coming off of this contract season. You have established that you and Pete Alonso should not be mentioned in the same breath. I'm sorry. They shouldn't be. This is no longer the comparison. It's got to be closer to Juan Soto. And you get to see it this offseason. Like, you get to see what Juan Soto gets this offseason when he hits the open market. And his agent has to have some understanding that as great as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was this year, he's not getting the Juan Soto money. It's just, it's not going to happen. But when they look at it, if they can kind of get in a respectable range of that, maybe the like, as Jim says it, he's not going to get the full money because he won't get the term. But if he gets, like, the per annum close to that, but not the term, is he willing to do it? I would hope so. But what this all leads to is, if you're keeping this front office, right, and they're not going to address this today, they just won't, because they don't want to negotiate through the media. They're not going to make this more difficult than it needs to be on them. You'd love the transparency, but you understand why they're not going to address it. But really, the number one thing of import today is just, like, what is your relationship with these guys and what is the plan for them? Like, do you think that you're the right people to be at the negotiating table with Vladdy and Bo? Because ultimately, that has to be the only reason that you're here. It can't be because of their contracts and the awkwardness of one more year of Shapiro and hiring a new president who has to come in here. Like, he just built the ballpark. Like, nobody cares about any of that stuff. I certainly don't. I don't think you do as the fan. Who does? Who cares? Who cares about what their contracts are or whether they'd have to pay them out a year early? Like, that's kind of pro sports. That's it's a pretty common thing. Coaches, executives, whatever, that seeing the end of their term is not guaranteed. All that really matters here in terms of, I don't want to say their legacies because that's winning, but in terms of this year, this offseason, the here and now, is, are you the guys that can sit down at the table with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and hash this out and get it done and make sure that it is done this offseason? Because Jim's right. What a nightmare it would be to walk Vladdy to free agency. What a nightmare it would be for Juan Soto to leave the New York Yankees of all teams, get a huge bag of money, and then Vlad just replicate that exact same scenario and force the Blue Jays' hands. Like, again, these things, waiting on these things is not going to benefit them. It hasn't benefited them now, and I don't think it's going to benefit them in the future. And you've got two players with ample reason to bet on themselves, ample reasons to walk themselves to free agency. God, just their names alone carries a real value. And so Vlad's got to get done, and that's got to be the number one question. And then number two, it's just like a, you know, 1B situation, is what are you doing with Bo? What's the number for Bo that you're willing to tenure him? What is the buy low number for Bo that you think is a reasonable offer that could actually get it done? And if it doesn't work out, will you do the right thing and make sure you trade him? Or will you do what I think is kind of the short-sighted, selfish thing, which is you just keep him to try to make a postseason to fill a requirement? If I when Jim said that story about, hey, you got to finish first, that would be me too. It wouldn't be make the playoffs. I'm sorry. Make the playoffs just isn't, it's not what it used to be, okay? It's just not. When you see the Royals get in and the Tigers get in, and I know the circumstances of their division and the 12 wins for the Royals against the White Sox and all this different stuff, whatever. Getting in the postseason, it's not enough. If you win a World Series, you win multiple playoff rounds, yeah, obviously now we're talking. But to be another team that wins below 90 games and gets in the postseason, fans looking at it like, yeah, I don't know. This isn't driving wild excitement. This doesn't feel like a true contender, one of the top five teams in baseball. They just feel like a wild card team. That's not going to cut it. So it's not a playoff performance or appearance for me. It would be like you set the number of wins. It's like you got to win 96 games. Like you got to be absurdly good next year. Like that's how we're evaluating you. It's a sample size sport. That's what it's got to be. But if you're doing that, I think you also have to have the clause of if Bo Bichette's not re-signing here, you gotta figure something out. If he's not going to sign here, we're not opening up for just a crazy amount of money for a guy that did have, I'm sorry, a buy-low season. It has to count. As good as you've been, as consistent as you've been, Bo Bichette, that has to count against you from a dollars and cents standpoint. So what exactly does that look like? And if it's not something that the two of you can agree with, hey, man, it's been fun. We'll miss seeing your helmet fly off as you dive into home plate. Take care. Hopefully you get that contract with another organization. But, yeah, you just can't. You can't walk. I don't think you can walk either of these guys in a free agency. But you certainly can't walk both in because of that scenario that Jim just outlined and the farm system. And it's like, wow, so you let the guys just leave? Almost, that's like one of those things where you say, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, actually, re-sign Atkins and Shapiro. They make them work. They lose Vladdy and Bo. Make them work. Make them show up here every single day and have to face the fans and deal with the media and deal with the criticism. Because, yeah, like that's almost merciful to be like, hey, so you failed and then you lost the two cornerstones of the franchise, but now you're gone. Don't worry about it. Hey, enjoy all the millions of dollars you got. Yeah, you can't have that. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Again, Blair and Barker, the two of these guys, 11 o'clock, we're like, you know, a little over 15 minutes out from Shapiro and Atkins speaking and Blair and Barker setting it up and then breaking it down. So yeah, kind of appointment listening today to those two guys. Anyways, quick break and let's come back again. You can watch this on Sportsnet, or you can watch it on Sportsnet app. You can listen on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And again, it's going to be streaming all over Sportsnet. So catch it there. Anyways, quick break and we'll be right back.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You know my guy Mike Jose is down bad when he's like playing Kendrick stuff and he's like, he's a huge Drake guy. Drake's unfollowing people on Instagram right now. It's like, LeBron. LeBron sang the most popular song in America. Gotta unfollow him. DeMar DeRozan went to an event that was unifying gang violence in his hometown. How dare he? My feelings are hurt. Unfollow. Dude, when you see someone unfollows you, like someone you know, Like, I've had it before with colleagues. Like, where you see a colleague, like, go out of their way to unfollow. And obviously, you know, listen, I normally do it back. But I've never been, like, the initiator of that. Like, I don't believe in that type of behavior. I just think it's so weird and small and petty and lame that it's like, if you do that, especially nowadays in the world of mute, right? Like, do I mute people on Twitter? Do I mute colleagues? Do I mute friends? Yeah. Like, to unfollow somebody is like your little statement to the world where you're like, I'm not going to say anything to your face, but someday I hope you notice. Take that. Like, okay. And then the funniest thing is if you ever confront someone, which I have in the past, I've been like, you follow me? They're like, what? No, like there must have been a mistake. It must, I, you know what I think is happening? I think it's just Instagram and Twitter are just randomly unfollowing people from it. It's so weird. I've been having this problem. This is crazy that you mention it. It's like the same thing of I didn't see this text. They're the same pantheon of lie. Although sometimes at least you might miss a text. Yeah, don't even say you missed a text. Just say the truth. Hey, I was going to write you back, and then I forgot to do that in a timely manner. That's actually, like, why can't we just say that? That's, like, the most acceptable thing ever. Hey, I saw this text, and I thought about it for a second, and I couldn't write you back. And everyone's like, yeah, I know how that is. But instead, we still lie. We're just little goblins lying out here. Oh, I didn't see it. Then you hang out with that person, and it's like they spend their entirety of the hanging out with you on their phone. Like, looking at their phone. I just got a notification, push notification for Uber Eats. Says I should get a buy one, get one free. It should be sent. Is there anything more depressing than that, by the way, is when you think you're popular and you're like, ping, ping, and you're like, ooh, who's texting me? And then it's like, it's just Uber Eats reminding you, you can't cook. You're lonely. That's it. Hey, usually you order food around now, lonely guy. You still doing that today or what's up? Nah? No? You learn to cook? Learn to do something for yourself? You went out with a friend? You went to dinner with a friend? Oh, no, you're buying it. Oh, you're getting it. Oh, you're back. You're back with me, your old friend Uber Eats push notification. Anyway, Arbor Jack isn't getting suspended. If you didn't see, he had a pretty dirty hit on Tim Stützle in the preseason. Knocked him out of the game. This is a guy who everyone was like, I saw like this stuff where people were upset about him going after Paré because Paré didn't fight back. It's like, so what? He left his gloves on. That wasn't like a vicious assault. Paré's a grown-ass man. It's hockey. It's part of the culture of the sport. Like, I just saw some people going, you shouldn't even be playing in this game. You should have been suspended. I was like, for what? That's what the world you want to live in is guys get suspended for punching other players with gloves on? Like, you really want to go down that road? Anyway, maybe it's a straw man. I don't know. I just saw a couple things. I went, oh, this is weird. The hit itself, though... Don't you got to give him a game? Like, I don't know. What am I don't know what I'm missing here. He's just like, he goes high on a star player in a meaningless game. Who's coming? It doesn't matter. I guess star player, whatever. He goes high on a player, comes through. Like, I thought those were the kind of the hits that they want out of the game. I don't mind. Listen, I think if you're a fan of this show, this program, you know, I'm pretty hit friendly, fight friendly, violence in sport friendly. But that one just seemed like an obvious no-brainer. Hey, you're missing the first three games of the season. Can't have it. I don't know. Not sure what I missed. Either way, subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Tomorrow, the return of James Myrtle and Dan Hanzus of the Heed the Call podcast. Very excited for that one. We'll see you then.